I love this season. I've thoroughly enjoyed being a part of the Cantata Choir, and I hope you'll all make it out tonight. It will be, if nothing else, an experience. It will be something you experience. That is a promise that you get a refund if you've got an experience. I know it will be a great time. Daryl is going to be singing a solo, and I'm not making that up as a joke. He gets one verse all to himself. It's been a really joyous time to celebrate and sing with people, but I think we have to really talk about joy. I think we need to start by acknowledging that for many people, Christmas is a complicated season. Christmas is not a joyous season for everyone. Sometimes Christmas is tough. It helps. The fervor of the season brings to mind those who have lost. The fervor of the season brings back painful memories. We need to acknowledge that we worship a God big enough to take our pain. We don't pretend to have it together all the time. We don't pretend to always be happy. I don't know much about the heart of Christians, except for they're always happy. We are not them. And you need to hear that it's okay. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be broken. And this is a place where you can be those things. And at the same time, while we acknowledge the imperfection of the world and the brokenness we often experience, we are confronted by a verse from Philippians that says, "Rejoice in the Lord always." Let me repeat it for you. Rejoice. I do believe that joy is a muscle. I think gratitude is something that becomes easier the more we practice. And I say this not as one who has mastered it, because if you have been around me at all, you know that is not the case. Anger comes easy. I find frustration to be my default response, followed quickly by sympathy. But I worship a God who says to the Apostle Paul, rejoice. I worship a God who throughout Scripture tells us that we are to give thanks in all things. It would be easy to dismiss that as pie-in-the-sky thinking, this cult-like abandon of our lesser or our more complicated emotions simply to put a smile on our face. But first of all, the church in Philippi is not necessarily a place that is free from conflict. Before the part we read from today's scripture, we know that there are at least two or three things going on within that body of believers. Some of them are external. They are being persecuted. They're being wounded. Some of them are internal. They cannot agree about the color of the dirt inside the sanctuary. They didn't really have a sanctuary. That's also true. They were fighting with each other. There were people sowing dissension. They were a place that was in the midst of turmoil, and they were a church that Paul loved. And in the midst of that turmoil, Paul writes to them and says, rejoice. So the most difficult thing for us is not to deny that we are often in turmoil, but to figure out how do we practice rejoicing in the midst of it. For that, I want to turn to John the Baptist, who I've already expressed my love for. You brood of vipers, who told you to flee the wrath? There's an axe waiting to chop down some trees somewhere. I think that might have been. You brood of vipers, I'm ready to chop some folks down. Who told you to run away? And then there is this response that in the midst of calling, not just a select few, but Luke tells us John calls the whole crowd. In the midst of calling them names, the crowd comes to him and says, okay, well, let's get baptized. And when they come, they say, well, what should we do? And it's the answer to that question, what should we do, where we really get into how do we practice joy. I was at the Galleria last night. I was glad to be there. I was there with my mother-in-law. It was her birthday. We were celebrating it. We were doing some things. Taking that away, though, would make being in the Galleria at Christmas time pretty close to personal hell. Like, just people everywhere. I mean, just next, and then there was some lady singing live, and the acoustics were so bad, I couldn't hear the people next to me, and it was hot, and, you know, and it smelled like sulfur. It didn't really smell like sulfur, that's just true. We can head out. Anyway, so we're sitting there next to the carousel, and I'm looking over, and I look over, and there's this beautiful group of young black children riding the carousel, and with them is this grandfather-aged man in a suit and tie, dressed in a knot, riding a fake horse going up and down. And he has the biggest grin on his face. He's going, it's not his first rodeo. He's going one-handed. He's on it. He said, that is it. That right there. In the midst of all this mess, he is focusing on what is important. And he's having a great time. It is easy to focus on the mess, on the crowd, on the trash, on the crumbs that are left on the table, on the people who are different from you shopping in the place that you love. But somewhere in the midst of all that, the people who are ahead of us in life have learned how to hold on one-handed and grin like there's no tomorrow. John the Baptist says three different things to three different groups of people when they come to ask him, what should they do? The first group, he says, you need to have two coats to give one away. And they could have said, that's dumb. What if one of them gets dirty? Because when confronted with an opportunity for salvation and joy, it is easy to be cynical. God didn't really mean that thing about two coats. That's metaphor. How many of you have more than one coat in your closet? How many of you have to put your winter clothes somewhere else because you have too many coats still in your closet? Not a lot. Coats are heavy. They take up a lot of space. It's easy to think that, well, that's not real. We don't have to deal with that. But what I love about the crowd confronted by kind of an aggressive, angry John the Baptist, they just say, as far as we know, okay. Get on with that baptism thing, because we would rather give up a coat and experience salvation than have something we don't need. When confronted for the same situation, he says to the tax collector, don't take more than what you're owed. See, that's kind of their livelihood. Like, they get a pretty good bit of their money from that, from taking that. But as far as we know, they don't turn around and walk away, because they have realized that there is something more important than their extra income. Closer it gets to Christmas, the more hectic the world seems to become. And the more hectic and anxious the world seems to become, the easier it is to fall into patterns of entitlement and bitterness. Maybe you need to leave here and go to the Galleria. Pay $2 and ride a plastic pony. Maybe we should do that one day. We should just leave here and go get a group photo. Because life is too short to be focused on all the mess. Mark Twain had a quote that went something like, I spent half my life worrying about things that never happened. We are so good at predictive anxiety. This might happen, or this might happen, or that. You know what? It might. What good could you do worrying about it? first Sunday of Advent, we're going to celebrate hope by turning off our partisan news channels. And on the second Sunday of Advent, we're going to start digging into Scripture more. And we're going to start digging into prayer more. That's what we're going to do. And on the third Sunday of Advent, I think we're poised to become people who actually experience joy. To turn off the mess and learn to have fun. Every day, God is in our midst saying, here's your chance, buddy. Now, are you going to spend your time worrying about all that stuff? Or are you going to ride?